I hope as we explore this a bit, we'll see we shouldn't enjoy the ride because the destination is a place that we seek, but rather a person. Hopefully in the class, that came across, that it's all about who will be there, as magnificent as the what of heaven is. And this means it's not so much a physical journey as a spiritual journey. And we often employ the metaphor of a journey in speaking of major events in our lives. For example, a child arrives to overjoyed parents. Or there are the adolescent rites of passage, meaning learning to drive and to shave. Depending on whether you're a girl or a boy, a different part of the body might be shaved, but we talk about it as a rite of passage. Graduates and newlyweds embark on a new phase in their lives. And perhaps most significantly, we speak of those who have gone on before in death. If life is a journey, then it's not just to a blind end. The world might tell us that we need things to enjoy it now, since this is it for them. The world contents itself with toys for big boys because it sees the destination as a plot of ground or a small vase. But we, like Abraham in our reading, see the person of God eagerly awaiting us at the terminal. Stand around sometime over at Pearson and see the joy of people meeting those who are getting off a plane. And even more than the fact that he's there waiting for us, he's been actively arranging our lives since before we existed. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. Psalm 139, verse 16. The Good News Bible puts it this way. You saw me before I was born. The days allotted to me had all been recorded in your book before any of them ever began. This is the God who has known our path from the time he conceived of us in his mind. If God had his way, we would walk with him daily in a garden. And he's waiting for a reunion with us in a new garden where the tree of life still grows by a stream. This is how Stephen puts it when he talks about Abraham's call. It's found in Acts chapter 7, verse 2 through 5, the second part, if you want to look it up. Brothers and fathers, listen to me. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham while he was still in Mesopotamia, before he lived in Haran. Leave your country and your people, God said, and go to the land I will show you. So he left the land of the Chaldeans and settled in Haran. After the death of his father, God sent him to this land where you are now living. He gave him no inheritance here, not even enough ground to set his foot on. But God promised him that he and his descendants after him would possess the land, even though at the time Abraham had no child. We often think of how far Abram, or Abraham, if you prefer, had to go physically across an arid land, how he got stalled with his father in Haran. But even more, consider how far he had to go in his spiritual journey. Like us, he was a work in progress. He set out from his homeland to follow God's calling, yet not once, but twice, he lied and passed his wife off as his sister. Well, he misused the truth. She was his half-sister after all, but far more important than that, she was his marriage partner. I don't know if you'd call that an alternate truth or fake news just to protect himself, But God didn't seem to think that it was just a little white lie. Twice he tried it, and twice he was caught. Then there was the matter of his sons. We already read from Stephen that he didn't have any children. And because he was old, he thought that somehow he needed to help God out a little. He needed to help God out in this promise to give him an heir. First, he took a mistress in order that he could have descendants. But that was Sarai's idea. It wasn't God's. I don't think you have to read very far in that story to understand that that didn't come without a lot of strife. Then when God renewed his promise to give him a son, Abraham laughed as he considered his old age. And they ended up naming the child Isaac, which means to laugh when he was born just as God had promised. And at this point, you might be thinking, along with me at least, wait, didn't we just read about Abram in this great faith chapter in Hebrews? And yet, he's lying. He's trying to orchestrate his own life. He's doing all these things. And we read about him in Hebrews chapter 11. Here's the really great news for you and me. Abraham isn't called the father of the faithful because he always lived an upright life. Rather, he is called faithful because in the situations that really mattered, he trusted that God would lead him. He learned, and sometimes with a little difficulty, to give his will over to God. Let's go back to our text. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. Ladies, as far as I know, this is the first recorded instance of a man who would not stop and get directions when he was lost. And I jest a little, I jest a little because of the way that the NIV translates it. But the Hebrew writer is making a serious and significant point. Abram was ready to pick up and leave all that he knew to follow God's calling. Think of others that the Bible talks about. Of Rebecca, of Ruth, of Peter, and Matthew, who've left everything they knew to follow God's call. It's said of these people later in Hebrews chapter 11, they confessed they were strangers and foreigners on the earth. For people who speak in this way make it clear they are seeking a homeland. If they'd been thinking of the land that they'd left behind, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. Indeed, he has prepared a city for them. That's from the New Revised Standard, because I like the way that they use those words, homeland and a better country. And again, of Abraham in our reading. By faith, he stayed for a time in the land he had been promised, as in a foreign land, living in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked forward to the city that has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. So Abraham's security was rooted in his trust in his guide to bring him safely home. And for us, each step of the journey needs to also follow God's direction. If God is our guide, then like Abraham, our path and our destination are sure, because he has laid out the safest and best course for us. So the first and most important reason to enjoy the ride is that God waits for us at the destination. True North. We're from Canada. We sing about it. Some of you may know that many years ago, I worked as a geologist, and I spent some time in the bush in northern Quebec in the winter. And I want to relate a little story that I think demonstrates how not trusting in a reliable guide, in something that drifts, can hurt you. We lived in the bush in northern Quebec. It was particularly cold that week, around minus 40 at night. And this particular day started with a gray, cloudy day. Now, those of you who spend time in the bush know that the best way to find your direction is via the sun. But on a day when it's gray and cloudy, there is no shadow, so you can't use the sun. And we were preparing our survey that was about 10 kilometers away from our site. And that's done by cutting something called a baseline and then other lines across it. And so essentially, you go on snowshoes, you cut out a path, and you mark the spot in 50-meter increments, and then we came along later with instruments, and we measured the magnetism and the electrical response of this potential ore source down below us. So that day, with no sun, we're forced to use compasses. And everything went fine. We were cutting lines. And it came near to the end of the day, which happens pretty early in northern Quebec in the winter, I'll tell you, in February. There was one more line to cut. The last line across. And it was about 800 meters that had to be cut. So we only had one skidoo. There wasn't enough carrying capacity for three of us, so two were going to go back, and one would come back and get me, because I volunteered to do the last line. And so all I had to do, because of the way that we were going, the trail came in like this, we went down to our baseline and back, and I was on a line right here. I just had to go 800 meters, and I would hit the trail after about 300 more meters. That seemed pretty easy. I'd catch up with the guy coming to get me, and I'd get a taxi ride home 40 minutes later, and everything would be good. So I took my compass, started at the place I was going to, marked out the places, and got to the end of the line, and then I was supposed to walk 800 meters. And so I started with my compass going through the bush. Now, it was really thick bush. And so I kind of had to adjust a lot to get around some of the stuff, but 800 meters, not very far. I paced off 800, 900, 1,000, 1,100, thinking, something's wrong. And just about that time, I looked ahead, and I saw a snowshoe track in the bush. Now, we're 120 miles from anywhere, and I thought, we must have left that snowshoe track. And so I walked up, and I took my snowshoe. Oh, perfect fit. But it's at about 60 degrees to the direction that I'm going. And I realized that I was in trouble. I wondered what it was going to be like to spend a night out in the bush. So I took the safest course, and I walked backwards along my trail until I got to the baseline. In the meantime, I heard the snowmobile come, wait, and leave without me, and I figured I was going to have to walk back the 10 kilometers, but eventually both snowmobiles came, because there was another one that our boss had, looking for me. And they caught up with me and took me home. And that night at dinner, my boss chided me greatly for not looking at the map, because on the aerial photos, smack between the end of that line and the trail, was a giant magnetic anomaly. I had been spending my time following the compass like this, and every time I shot a new direction, I was getting turned around and I'd walked in a complete circle. Don't let earthly compasses take you away from the true north. Jesus is the unerring way to the Father. John 14:6 says, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." And so the second reason we need to enjoy the ride is we have a guide who has been there. When he describes it to us, it's because he lived there, and he returned there, and he can lead us there. He knows the way. Life is a journey traveling companions. According to some sociologists, the best way for a family to grow together is by going camping. Remember Abraham and his tents? I don't know if he knew this ahead of time, How many of you tried family camping? Somebody mentioned that earlier about going camping. She didn't like it was because it was dark at night when she went camping. She had to use a flashlight. We do live in Canada, after all. And if you hurry, you still have another month. You can go and camp for free at any of the national parks. But don't ever ask my children or Bill Engvall. The Texas comedian relates a story of how his wife heard that exploring the country in a cross-country road trip would bring them closer. As he puts it, there's a big difference between bonding with someone and being stuck with them. In my family, the recollections of what happened while camping are more legendary than Paul Bunyan and his blue ox. If you listen to them, they'll tell you stories of the picnic that Noah would have felt at home at, mosquitoes the size of small birds, or the child who threw up in every state that begins with the letter M. Michigan, Maine, Montana, Massachusetts, Minnesota. It probably explains why I'd never been to Missouri until this summer and the eclipse, and Mississippi is still on my list. And, of course, the left turn that we missed at Albuquerque. These lowest times of the vacation, though, are the ones we look at back at most fondly. And they're all the more sweet because we shared them with our loved ones. And why we shout road trip when something special is happening somewhere else. On life's road, we certainly will have highs and lows. But what a difference your traveling companions will make. We remember and reminisce about these because they were shared with our family. In the face of eternity, momentary afflictions come into perspective. And in eternity, who will be there to share our joys but our family in Christ? Solomon understood the importance of traveling companions intimately. In Ecclesiastes 4, 9, and 10, he says, "Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls down and has no one to help him up." And Amos considers it rhetorical when he asks, "Do two walk together unless they have agreed to do so?" We're encouraged in Hebrews chapter 10, 25, to not neglect to meet together, but encourage one another, because God understands that his pilgrims need each other for support for the journey. That's why we're here this morning, to meet. I need to see your banner for Christ, and you need to feel oneness with me in knowing him. Jesus often taught as he walked along the road, and he drew his stories from the life and the people and events around him. As we travel this life, we're merely beginning to experience what God has for us at our destination. We have the Spirit in the Christians around us as a foretaste of that complete immersion in God. We're encouraged to be unified here because we will be that way in heaven. Our passage today began with, by faith. We looked at Abraham, but this passage is about many others who did marvelous things because of their trust in God. They were foreigners and pilgrims in this world because they looked for something better. Abraham, like so many of us, tried to set his course by his own compass, and that led to trouble. Rather, we need to fix our eyes on the true North Star, the Son that the Father knows intimately. Then, like Abraham, we will be credited for trusting in him. And we need companions. We need the book of the Bible to guide us. We need to relive the stories that Jesus told. And we need to share our hurts and our triumphs with the family of God. We need to walk hand in hand with the Spirit. We need to love with agape love. Then the church will be a powerful force in this world. So, we have a sure end in the person of God who waits for us there. We have an unfailing guide in his Son, and we have loving companions. Surely Christians, above all else, should really know how to enjoy the ride.